Welcome to the Monster Club, an honest look at horror movies from lifelong horror fans. Fair warning, you may not have seen this movie. We have spoilers, ho! I am your host, Jethro Silverwing.
And I'm Tuck.
This week, we take a look at the 1981 horror comedy, The Monster Club, starring Vincent Price, John Carradine, and Donald Pleasance. Alternative titles! Disco of the Damned.
Humans are monsters too, a parable.
Ooh, I like that one. All right, so what we have here is what they refer to as an anthology movie. Basically, it's a larger movie divided into small shorts.
Right.
Amicus Films was known for these in the 60s and early 70s, although this is not an Amicus film.
Yeah, it was just done in the style of.
Right, done in the style of, and actually a lot of the players in the Monster Club appeared in other anthologies, so this was nothing new to them. So what we have is an hour and a half long movie, or longer actually, I think, with three smaller movies within telling a story. And we're going to go over them during this little segment. So, what did you think of the overall movie?
It was interesting. This is from across the pond in the UK, so it's a British film, and it's a peer into a little bit of 1980s British culture, seen through the filter of a corny horror film. It was as much about making the audience laugh, I think, as anything else. I don't know. I normally wouldn't go for this kind of movie, but I found myself enjoying it, especially the funny bits.
Now, my overall impression of the movie is, as a whole, this movie sucks. Don't get me wrong. I do recommend watching it. It's fun. It really is. But as a movie, if you look at the entire thing, it's like, what the hell did I just watch?
It's weird, yeah.
I think we can both agree the shorts are better than the movie as a whole.
Yeah, you know, the whole Monster Club venue and all that, it's just, you know, goofy,
campy,
you know, campy dressing, you know, a package to put the three shorts in, the three acts.
Yeah, Christopher Lee was actually offered a role, and he looked at it and went, no.
This was near the end of Vincent Price's career, wasn't it? Did he do anything in the last decade?
Let me check the Internet Movie Database. I'm pretty sure this is one of his last movies, and then he did Edward Scissorhands.
And he narrated Vincent, that little six-minute film from...
Yeah. Actually, from the looks of it, he did quite a few things after The Monster Club. Mostly voiceovers, though.
Because he was looking pretty old by the time this came out.
Yeah, it looks like it's mostly voiceovers after The Monster Club.
So this is probably one of the last times we'd see him on film, and he made a pretty good vampire, I think.
Oh, yeah. You know what the interesting thing is? In the long-storied career of Vincent Price, this is the only time he's ever played a vampire.
He's always been the human, right?
Yeah, he's always been for the most part, he's been the protagonist. Vincent Price, although corny as hell movie, you could tell he was having fun.
Yeah. I would think it would be safe to say that Vincent Price was propping up the interstitial scenes.
And it did have a very short, failed theatrical run in the UK.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, without Price's name in this, I don't think it would have gone anywhere at all.
It was based on the works of British horror author R. Chetwynd Hayes. So all of this comes from his imagination, I'm assuming.
Yeah, the three short stories were his. And then, of course, they put Chetwynd Hayes, I should say, in as a character.
Played by
John Carradine.
Ah, there we go. Okay, I gotcha.
John Carradine played Hayes. And... yeah, so the three short stories were short stories of his. Mm-hmm. And it is worthy of note that Chetwynd Hayes hated this movie.
Ah, Is that why they don't list? Oh wait, no, it is him, but it's a fictionalized version of him. Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
But yeah, I read notes that he actually hated the final result. They changed a lot of his story to make it appeal to an audience.
Oh,
and,
awesome.
And he did not like the disco scene. Now, let's talk about the shorts. So there are three of them, and two of them describe, shall we say...
crossbreeds.
Yeah, crossbreeds between different humanoid creatures.
Mm-hmm.
So, first we have the Shadmok.
Yeah.
The Shadmok, as described by Vincent Price, is basically what happens when mongrels breed. Mongrels in the humanoid monster world.
Right, they listen three main veins of monster, the vampires, the werewolves, and the ghouls. And sometimes they interbreed and produce crossbreeds between those, and then sometimes those crossbreeds breed with each other, and or also humans, and they produce various results.
Right. And the Shadmok is basically the bottom of the barrel.
I found the Shadmok to be the oddest of any of the monsters listed. Pretty much just creepy shut-ins who could do with a haircut, who can nuke you with a whistle.
Yeah, a directed microwave whistle. And that is just the weirdest power for a supernatural being to have.
I know.
We have a young girl trying to get take advantage of him because he's wealthy. Why are these monsters always wealthy?
Yeah, where does he get all that money in that huge house? I figure, you know, must be long-term investments that all the vampires make hundreds
Could
of years
be.
Ago.
Could be, but... are we just to assume that all of these paranormal creatures have long lives? Because they never really go into that. I mean, how long does a Shadmok live? He seemed to be of middle age.
Well, he has plenty of relatives around, so maybe they just kind of help each other out.
It's probably just a family thing, I suppose.
Yeah.
Old family money type thing. He probably has no idea where the money came from. And he uses this money to buy things to make him happy because... as it's described, he is so hideous and frightening in appearance that no one wants to be around him.
Yeah, I found that strange. I mean, he didn't look monstrous at all. He just looked like a guy who could get some sun and maybe like a new haircut.
Well, you know, I think what they were going for without breaking any copyrights was kind of a Lon Chaney Phantom of the Opera type look. Just giving him kind of a homely appearance.
Yeah, and he didn't have a lot of makeup on... that suggested sunken eye sockets, you know, a haunted look. But other than that, he looked perfectly human.
And woe is he who hears the Shadmok microwave whistle. By the way, that
whistle.
Yeah,
that's great.
By the way, that one scene where the girl turns around and reveals that she's basically melted is the only reason this movie has a PG-13 rating.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Wow, I did find it pretty horrific. I did find myself wondering how she made it home all that way pretty easily for someone who's a charred mess melting to pieces.
Hmm.
Right there and then, it's like, okay, did she get in her car and drive all the way back to her?
I don't know. She would kind of have to. I can't imagine her hitchhiking like that.
Or walking. Or
hey, baby, need a ride? Ass? Is ass gas? Or, oh my God! Forget about the ass part!
Maybe it takes a while to kick in. You know?
Maybe, I don't know.
I don't know, it happened pretty instantly to the cat. Maybe it has to do with body mass, you know?
Well, yeah, I mean, the cat, you know, smaller mass, boom, dead right away. Yeah, that's what you get for pissing off the Shadmok. Don't kill a Shadmok's pigeon! Alright, so, Shadmok. Not a bad story. Kind of odd.
And what was with the thing at the end? You know, he's just kind of crying, you know, mourning the fact that he had to kill the love of his life because she was, you know.
Well, I think that's pretty much self-explanatory right now. He's in mourning. So, you know, she turned on him at the end. He melted her face. And now he's like, oh, God, I'll never be loved.
But his family, I put that in quotes. I'm assuming they're all like.
Yeah, they're supposed to be relatives, yeah.
Relatives are kind of just, you know, watching him cry. Not attempting to comfort him at all, but I guess maybe that's just how monsters are.
They did form a circle around him. You know, they were trying to be supportive in their own way, but I don't think these creatures are, you know, all touchy-feely. It'll be all right. Don't worry. You'll find someone. All right. So that's Shadbach. Then we switch back to the club scene where a vampire director is going to screen his latest film based on his own childhood.
Who is he, do you think he was based on?
I don't know if he was based on anyone, really. No clue. I didn't find anything in any notes saying that he was inspired by anyone particular. Okay, so we have the scene called The Vampires.
I think The Vampires is probably my favorite of the three arcs.
It's definitely the most family-friendly portion of the whole movie. I look at this is a vampire tale for school children.
Yeah.
Beware the men with violin cases! because they have mallets and stakes in these cases.
I found the jokes in The Vampires funny. Especially the violins in the soundtrack. They used a lot of violins in the soundtrack. The music stuttering with the gate gag. I had to watch that a couple of times. That was funny.
that people might recognize that now as the Undertaker's entrance theme in wrestling, but it is actually a very old theme. It's just called a funeral march.
And the guys are carrying out Donald Pleasance on a stretcher. The music stutters with them struggling with the gate. It just kind of hitches and rewinds and plays again. And
but let's not forget the guy accidentally hits his head on a beam, and they put in a bonk sound. That was funny as well.
I thought that was only in Star Wars. Okay, that's interesting.
Nope,
I'm going to have to go back and watch that again.
But also, let's not overlook that Donald Pleasance's character is ogling young boys at play but from behind a shrubbery.
Yeah, that is suspicious. It really is suspicious. Dressed as a priest, no less.
Elquin and I were watching this last night, and we're like, is Donald Pleasance ogling young boys from behind a shrubbery? Yes, I think he is. But what the hell was up with that?
Most people will remember Donald Pleasance as one of the main characters from the Halloween movies, but I remember him mostly from his character in Fantastic Voyage. So it was a pleasant surprise to see him pop up here.
A Donald Pleasance surprise? Okay, so the skinny on the vampires is Donald Pleasance and his team of vampire hunters track down this father vampire by getting to the kid.
All right.
And then they attempt to kill him, and Donald Pleasance's character ends up getting bitten at the end, and oh no, now we have to stake you!
You wouldn't want us chasing you through the underground, sir? Wouldn't be respectful.
And that's when the title makes sense, since it's The Vampires, plural.
Mm-hmm.
The other gag that I really like is that as they're carrying the stretcher to the van, the stake is going right through the bottom of the stretcher.
It's like, wait a minute, you didn't stake him on the stretcher.
I know.
And then when they push him into the van, the stake breaks.
It works great as a visual gag, yeah.
Oh, yeah, but the moral of the story is always remember your stake-proof vest with tomato juice.
Is it good to sing? I always wear a stake-proof vest. Filled with tomato ketchup.
Yeah, how is something a steak-proof vest? I mean, it either goes in or it doesn't. And that steak was hammered into that guy.
Like
so
I said,
that was just kind of done cheesy, you know, tongue-in-cheek. My steak-proof vest with tomato ketchup.
Okay, so that's that one, and then we go back, and we have what is the best song in the entire thing. I mean, the whole thing's done in a disco. They have bands that are playing, and the best song of the whole thing is called The Stripper.
Ah, yeah, that was a pretty neat effect.
And I read in the titles, you know, there's a song called The Stripper. I'm like, what? No, this is actually this is a good song. I liked it. It was performed by a band called Night, with Stevie Lang on lead vocals. Stevie Lang, she did I read she never really hit it big, but she did background vocals for a lot of bands in the 80s.
Let's touch on the stripper bit, though, because that's worth describing. So they have this stripper show up on stage during this musical number that Jethro was just talking about, and she proceeds to strip down to the brassiere and the lingerie. Strips down to her lingerie, and then they flip off the stage lights and flip on, you know, lights
she's
behind
backlit.
A screen, so she's in silhouette. Yeah,
but then it goes to animated.
Well, she proceeds to strip off the rest of it, and she's naked, but in silhouette, and then she proceeds, you know, to strip off her flesh or skin, but it's done in a very cartoony, animated style, and pretty soon you just see her skeleton dancing on the stage, and Vincent Price is just like, nice bones.
Beautiful bones, don't you think?
Oh, God.
That was a good effect. That surprised me. That had to have taken a lot of time to do. At the time, for the budget that they were doing this. But that was a shining moment in the disco scenes. Okay, so now we have the ghouls.
The ghouls, which is the most memorable short of the whole thing. Compared to the others, this is very well done. This could have made a made-for-TV movie back in the 60s and 70s that would have been very popular, I think. It's about a movie director who is looking for a location to shoot his next big movie, a big horror movie, and he wants something off the beaten path. So he just happens down this road through a fog bank. And by the way, this is why I think this is the best scene in the whole movie. I cannot pass by a fog bank, and we have them here in the Northwest. You can't pass by a fog bank now and think there are ghouls on the other side of that.
Mm.
I mean, that has stuck with me since I was a kid. There are ghouls on the other side of that fog bank. I mean, I was never frightened by it or anything like that. It's like, hey, there's a fog bank. I remember there were ghouls on the other side of fog banks.
They never really explained, you know, what ghouls are in this. Was it just common knowledge, you think, during the 80s?
Back in the 70s and 80s, things like ghouls and mummies, those were more of your common monsters. So
well, everyone knows vampires, werewolves, and mummies, and,
ghouls
and Frankenstein's monster. But ghoul, just to me, seems like a stereotypical, if somebody's creepy and hangs out with, you know, other monsters.
I'm looking at it this way. Ghouls, I think, have evolved into the modern-day zombies as far as story is concerned. You don't hear about ghouls anymore.
Yeah, so back then, before the modern zombie concept came about, ghouls are just pretty much creatures who dig up the dead to eat them.
Right. Ghouls eat human flesh. That's pretty much their defining characteristic. So no one really talks about ghouls anymore, but back then, zombies were just mindless slaves from voodoo magic. Mm-hmm. So, zombies have replaced ghouls in the hierarchy.
So, this director stumbles on this creepy, you know, little village. It seems almost abandoned. I wouldn't have stopped in there and asked around for anybody. I mean, it obviously looks...
Well, you know, if you're in a world where these things don't happen...
You don't think that, right?
You think logically, this is just a great place to shoot a horror movie.
So he's like, okay, cool.
Who's in charge? I gotta talk to someone.
The elders, you know, and then he's like, well, I'll just send my guys. My guys will talk to your guys. And he gets in his car after the silent mob suddenly pops into existence behind him. And, his car has been sabotaged. And then they do this really weird thing where they force him into the little upstairs room. Bodily. I mean, they're just like grabbing him and shoving him along into this little room. And then he goes to the window and looks out. And then moments later, after he's just shut the door on this mob of ghouls that have forced him into this little attic room, this girl just kind of walks in, you know, door is completely unlocked. You know, he didn't lock it or anything. So I found that weird. And he seems unusually calm for someone who's just been trapped
by an angry mob.
Of ghouls.
Of ghouls.
Well, he doesn't know.
Ghouls, he doesn't know.
But he knows that there's something off with these guys. There has to be. I mean, they're all, like, dirty and, you know.
Disheveled and thin.
They're looking at him with a gleam of something in their eye.
A1 sauce. We have someone dropped off this case of A1 steak sauce. We have nothing to put it on. Damn. Where are the elders? They'll come and give us steak.
I would find it unlikely that this village of ghouls would be able to resist just killing and eating this crossbeed girl. What did she call herself? A
Hoomgoo.
A Hoogoo? A
Hoomgoo. Hoomgoo.
A Hoomgoo.
Hoomgoo.
They call humans Humes. This is probably the worst thing in the whole anthology. Is the naming of the creatures. You know, when he goes down the family tree.
Yeah.
And it's just like the first half of the first species mixed with the last half of the next species as they crossbreed. Is like vampires and a human merge and become a vampu or it's like, what?
I wonder if that's one of the changes that was made from Chetwynd Hayes' original stories or if that comes from him, because it seems kind of
so a human silly and a goofy. Ghoul would produce a Hume goo.
A Hume goo.
It's like, really? Yeah. Goo? Really?
So she's just like, here, rabbit stew. Mm-hmm. Okay, great. I'll eat that.
Sure. Oh. Probably the most attractive chick in the village. I will eat your rabbit stew.
Which I'm hoping is rabbit. Could have been. Might not be. Rabbit might be a euphemism, you know?
Maybe.
Maybe it was somebody whose last name was Rabbit.
Okay, so we have the Hoomgoo helping the human out because she wants out.
Well, he convinces her that she wants out.
She's excited about the prospects of the outside world.
She just wants a nice dress, really. That's her motivation.
She wants stuff that doesn't come out of boxes in the ground.
And those are coffins, by the way, folks.
Mm-hmm. Everything comes from boxes in the ground.
Clothes, wood, food, all from boxes.
Food comes from boxes in the ground.
Yeah, except they've run out. They've dug up all the graves there.
Mm-hmm. So they're awaiting the elders. The elders who are bringing a supply truck. What's in the supply truck?
I guess corpses from nearby villages, I guess? I don't know.
Not a clue.
So they decide, okay, let's get out of here before these elders show up, because we're toast if the elders figure a way to get us out of this church that we've taken refuge in. But the ghouls cannot step on hollow ground, apparently.
Nope. I know the girl says they fall down if they go in the church.
All right.
Never before in the history of cinema have we seen so many people so good at throwing rocks and slings.
Lots of windows broken on that church.
As they make their break through the fog, they launch rocks at them using their slings and stuff like that.
Don't kill a pithead.
I did not get why, they had this awesome weapon, this thing that keeps the ghouls away, and he just decides to leave it behind in the brush. As if they couldn't just walk around it through the trees and find another path.
And they did!
Yeah.
They just went the other way. I mean, it gave them a few moments, I suppose, of delay, but...
I'd be holding on to that thing until I was safe and sound back in civilization.
Cross on a pole.
Mm. That reminds me, going back to the very beginning of the movie, that's a great line about, Vincent Price is talking to...
Everybody knows about garlic and stakes through the heart.
Yes, we all have our cross to bear.
Price gets this look on his face and...
I'd rather you didn't use that word.
It's a great joke.
It is.
Great joke.
That was probably the funniest line in the whole movie.
So the ghouls hit the girl in the back with a rock, and apparently...
Well, it looks like it hit the back of her head.
Don't kill a pithead.
I guess. I mean, a concussion, maybe, but death? They must be fragile, Hume Goose. So he decides, go get help, and he runs off to find a policeman at the freeway.
And they find the policeman. They're like, "Oh, there's this."
He says, just take me to the police station." Can't bring himself quite to say what he has seen.
But he does say. But he does mention the village. So the cops are looking at him because they're like, "A village?"
Yeah, it's weird. I only saw the one cop. I thought it was just the one cop in the car.
No, there were two in there.
Yeah, there were, but I didn't realize it until they turned around, and I was like, whoa, okay, there's two of them here, you know? Yeah.
So the cops are giving escort to... Dun-dun-dun!
The elders.
The elders.
You see, we always give the elders a police escort when they return to London.
And their supply truck. Filled with what we can only assume is Whoppers and... onion rings. No! Corpses!
And A1 barbecue sauce.
Of course. All right, so, The Monster Club, three decent shorts within a horrible movie, or a very campy and silly movie, I should say. And then after everything is done, Price's character decides, we need a new member of The Monster Club, and this member should be the human.
Mm-hmm. Everyone balks and says, what, a human? What are you, crazy?
What can he do?
And Vincent Price goes on a list of all the horrible things humans have done in the last 60 years or so.
Mass genocide, torture, all the different ways of killing off their own kind.
Nuclear weapons.
Mm-hmm.
And all this stuff's like,
I never realized he was so talented.
We don't like to boast.
I second the proposal.
They decide to let the human in. And is it me? Or does the werewolf guy, the maitre d', actually have the best costume of the whole thing?
Oh, easily. Consider, I mean, he doesn't, that's not a very high bar.
No, not a very high bar at all.
The rest of the monsters in this nightclub are basically just people with Halloween masks on. I mean, it's so painfully obvious.
You know how some people have ugly Christmas sweater parties around Christmas time?
Yeah.
This is ugly Halloween mask party. And honestly, if I had more friends in the area, I would do this.
Do you think it's all just like different monsters underneath the masks and they put on Halloween masks, be like, oh, this is the humans' idea of what we are. You know, is it funny?
I hadn't thought about that, but you know what? That is actually possible. There could be monsters under those masks,
but
we don't know.
Wouldn't that be a great scene in a movie if you saw this Halloween party of people just standing around in these awful, really bad Halloween masks, and there's an actual human there? And at some point, it's slowly revealed to him, mask by mask, that he's the only human there.
Yeah.
And
no,
they
take
off the masks, and then there are these really great, grotesque, monstrous faces and creatures underneath. That would be a fantastic scene.
I think so.
And by the way, worst costume, if they're costumes, is the big girl. What was she a monster? You know, how is she a monster? The one that's dancing with Vincent Price at the end. It's like she just looks like a big girl. That's about it.
I don't know. Maybe she was supposed to be a gypsy of some kind. I don't know. She just had this weird dress on. I don't know.
Yeah, it was weird.
Wasn't anything recognizable. But the worst part about the massive stuff were they weren't even complete costumes. It was weird Halloween mask, and everyone was wearing turtlenecks.
Mm-hmm.
You know, to hide the
or just regular
of the
clothes, you
or,
know,
or
just,
regular clothes. It was ridiculous.
Yeah, there was no effort to. I mean, you, for a low budget movie, you can't exactly do a Star Wars cantina kind of thing. I think that's just the best you could hope for as backdrop.
Oh God! But anyway, okay. So,
Price points out that humans are quite monstrous in their own right, and they all say, "Yeah, okay." You're in.
The human is in, and everyone dances the night away to the song that we start and end our podcast with, The Monster Club by The Pretty Things.
Mm-hmm. It's pretty cool seeing that in context.
So, like I keep saying, three decent short movies and a really corny rapping.
I was just noticing in the section on Wikipedia for in-jokes, there are a number of in-jokes in the movie relating to Amicus Films. the character of Linton Bosowski, I'm guessing that's the guy, the film producer that goes to, is an, his name is an anagram, but the real film's producer, Milton Sabotsky.
Yeah.
And then, oh no, but that, Bosowski, is the vampire producer. That's who that is in the movie. And he calls the movie that he's showing the club from beyond the tombstone is an allusion to From Beyond the Grave.
Hmm.
And the cast, includes Patrick McGee, Britt Eklund, Jeffrey Balden, all of whom appeared in the 72 anthology film Asylum from Amicus.
The Asylum, by the way, one of my favorites. Anthologies, and I'll tell you why. Someone in my grade school, we're talking like grade 4 or 5,
mm-hmm.
decided to play this movie at our school's Halloween show, at our Halloween party. This was not a movie for small children.
Okay.
Matter of fact, several parents complained afterward from their young kids, you know, like one and first and second graders having nightmares.
Oh, wow.
Because one of the scenes is disembodied limbs and a head and a torso chasing after a guy, you know, slowly dragging themselves along the walls and stuff like that. It's like, this is not a movie for children. I think I was in the fifth or sixth grade at the time. And it's like that movie actually stuck with me. One of the reasons I love horror, because I thought it was great. Like, how did they get that arm to move like that?
I was the same way when I was a kid seeing scary movies. I was like, how did they do that? Oh my God, that's so cool. Instead of, you know,
and I'm glad to say that Asylum is actually in my collection. I bought it a couple years ago. I found it on Amazon. All right. So is there anything left to say about the Monster Club?
I think that's about it. I don't have anything else.
All right.
But I think it would be a fun party film.
It is. It's a fun film, and it is geared toward kids. Without, with the exception of that one face-melting scene,
mm-hmm.
this is very a kids-oriented movie. It was meant for a kids' matinee,
mm-hmm.
that kind of thing. All right, then. The Monster Club. Next time, The Monster Club takes a look back at the 1993 Disney horror, Something Wicked This Way Comes, starring Jason Robards, Diane Ladd, and Jonathan Pryce. I am Jethel Silverwing.
I'm Tuck.
This week, The Monster Club has been brought to you by the letter and Cinema Unrest. Honest reviews by a lifelong horror fan. CinemaUnrest.com.